season premiere of SNL, hosted by Miley Cyrus, is over, but we're just getting started here on the SNL recap, on post-show recaps, and now here are the two guys who have not yet disappeared to go join the squad. I'm Rob Sestrino, here's Rich Tackenberg. Rich, how are you?
I am great. It is so good to be back. I'm finally let out of my box after a summer off.
Happy fall.
Thank you. Thank you. And it actually feels almost fall-esque out here in Los Angeles today.
Yeah, it's overcast day today. It's not a million degrees up here in the office, so I appreciate that. Anyway, so we are live here getting ready to recap the premiere of SNL with Miley Cyrus. And typically we have done these on Google Hangouts before in the past. This week, we are doing it here on Blab.im, which is a new platform. I'm not sure if too many of you guys who listen to the SNL podcast regularly are familiar with it, but it allows us to be even more interactive, and we have a chat room going. And then we also are able to take your questions and bring you on. We'll be hearing from James Keast in a little bit to talk about the musical guests, the musical stylings of Miley Cyrus, and much more. So we can be taking your questions here in the chat room as we go along. Plus, we can also hear from you guys as well, if people want to pop on and give us their take as we move along. Rich, so here we go. First of 3 weeks in a row in season 41 of SNL. Are you pumped up?
Oh, this is great. I'm very excited. Three strong weeks coming up. Some good guests. Obviously, we'll talk at the end about what will be the most interesting, which is the week of the 18th when we have an alumni join us. But it's the season. We're back. It's so exciting.
Set that up for the people who don't know who's coming up on SNL.
So next week, we have the person that I guessed, and I think you did as well, was going to host the season premiere, which is Amy Schumer.
So close.
It is the season of Amy. Very odd that they didn't bring her on for the season premiere, but clearly looking forward to her. And then the week after, we have the alumni, Tracy Jordan is back. I'm going to pull up who the musical guests are as well while we're talking about this. So next week, we're going to have Schumer at the weekend. Sorry. And then closing out our first three will be the great Tracy Morgan with Demi Lovato. As most people probably, if you're listening to this, you probably know Tracy Morgan was in a horrible car accident and was in a coma, suffered severe brain damage, and we wondered if he was even going to make it. We saw him at the Emmys just a few weeks ago, which was great. So it'll be very interesting to see how he will fare coming back. But obviously, there's going to be so much love in the room, and I'm sure a lot of cameos that week.
Very exciting. Okay, so Rich, we had our season premiere that we're going to recap here, talk about all of the major moments from the episode with that. But first, let me just ask you, what did you think overall about the first night back for SNL?
I really liked it a lot. I mean, I will say that, you know, what I think people often forget is that season premieres of SNL are rough. They're really hard. Everyone's cold. They've been hibernating in a cave, eating honey and, you know, whatever for a whole season, a whole summer. They're back. Everyone's sort of shaken off the dust. And, you know, we had Chris Pratt last year, which was, you know, and before that we had Tina Fey, and even as an alumni. So, you know, I judge these different than I'm going to judge an episode that we're going to see around Christmas time. And I thought that for everyone coming back, a lot of funny, a lot to like, a couple of misses, of course, always going to be some misses. But overall, I thought a very solid beginning to the season.
So Rich, what sort of housekeeping changes did SNL make getting ready for its 41st season?
So, you know, the big news, which is no news, is that nobody left the show. So, Keenan did not retire. Nobody was asked to leave. So we did promote four people from featured player to new cast members. So Beck Bennett, Kyle Mooney, Sasheer Zamata, and Colin Jost all moved over to full cast members. That leaves us with Michael Che, Pete Davidson, and Leslie Jones as still being featured players. And that seems to just be a chronological thing. Beck, Kyle, Sasheer, and Colin all joined us in season 39 at some point. Michael, Pete, and Leslie joined us in season 40. So it doesn't seem to be political, seems to be a timing thing. And then we have our new featured player, John Rudinsky, who was a stand-up comedian, was with the Groundlings. My guess is he was in the Sunday Company, which was sort of the pinnacle of the class structure. To be make it to the Sunday Company is quite a big deal, but it's not the main company, but still a very big deal. So he joined us, and as we saw last year with our featured players, got, I might say, more screen time than someone like, my man Bobby Moynihan. So an interesting sort of welcome to him to the group. It was fun to see him at the end being very excited. So not a lot of those changes, you know, obviously Leslie Jones being one of the newest people was in all of the promos that I saw for the season premiere. So they're really sort of, I think, sort of betting hard on Leslie Jones this season.
Yeah, it was a big night for Leslie Jones, especially from the second half on. She was really all over this thing.
Yes, very much so.
Okay, so we will talk about that and much more. Also, the big news-making part of this was the appearance of Hillary Clinton, yes, which we'll talk about. But let's get into this. Let's start with the opening monologue, which was the Trump and Melania address. Rich, we knew all summer long, really the Trump thing really started to happen right after SNL went off the air for yep. the end of season 40, and we were waiting all summer long for SNL's take on Trump. And here it is, we get Trump. Were you disappointed with what we ultimately got from SNL?
No, I liked it a lot. I would say I judged this almost more as a sort of live public beta of the Trump impression. You know, they had announced over the summer that Taron Killam was going to play Trump. I think that it was a reason for press, but I also think it was a way to say, yes, even though Daryl Hammond is in-house and he famously did Donald Trump for years, we're not going to use him. We're going to have one of the new guys do it. Was I disappointed when I first heard that? Yes. I love Daryl Hammond's Donald Trump. But in watching this, I really did feel like, no, this is the right move. We want a fresh take. Like, it's a different Donald. As we see anytime, a president, impression is passed from one cast member to another, it sort of changes. And I would say, was this the funniest? No, but I was very okay with that. I feel like this is going to be really good. I like that it was different, even to the extent that it was interesting that we got through an entire Donald Trump sketch without him ever saying you're fired, which I actually thought was an interesting sort of sign of this is making fun of Donald Trump, the politician. We're not going back to the old tropes that Daryl Hammond was famous for. And I thought bringing on Cecily Strong, not as another bangable daughter, but as Melania, was a very smart move. I thought the two of them together added a lot to that. So I really liked it.
You know, for me, I just feel like that we had so much talk, like during that first Republican debate, I remember so many people were on Twitter like, oh my God, this is the funniest SNL sketch I've seen in years, where Donald Trump has been so big and has been so broad over the course of the summer. I was just expecting SNL to be a little more out there. And I felt like this was a much more subtle approach to Trump and him himself, that he has been so, you know, such a character, and I guess you could say a caricature, that mm-hmm. I felt like this was very subdued in terms of how SNL first touches presidential nominee Trump.
Yeah, well, and let's talk about it now, because we're going to talk about it in a couple of sketches. One of the things that logistically, the fact that it was just him and Melania and not a Republican debate, we didn't sort of, you know, bring in the whole troop to like, let's get in a Jeb Bush impression, let's get a Marco Rubio impression, let's sort of set the stage, let's do a Carly Fiona impression, I think had a lot to do with what was going on behind the scenes. It was announced, I think, Friday, maybe even Thursday, that Hillary Clinton was going to show up to do the cold open with Kate McKinnon. So we all knew this was going to happen. And of course, if you're going to have that big of a guest, you want to put it in the cold open. Well, she's not in the cold open. It actually comes quite later in the first major block of SNL pre-update, which I'm going to guess had something to do with a scheduling issue with Hillary Clinton. So I think that this was sort of thrown together a little bit. I think that if they had known a week and a half ago, it's just going to be Donald Trump in the cold open, we would have had bigger, more production value. It probably would have been some kind of a debate type kind of format. So I think that they just sort of put this together as we're going to do something last minute because we need to stall because Hillary's not going to get here till 10 o'clock or whatever. I think that had a lot to do with it.
Rich, I don't want to make this at all about our personal politics, but in terms of the politics of SNL, did you feel like that this show in general was a complete and utter endorsement of Hillary Clinton and a knockdown of every other candidate, both on the Republican and Democratic side?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know, you know, obviously, watching and reading a lot about sort of the backstage stuff about SNL, everyone talks about how they try to keep politics out of it, and they try to just look at it from what is everybody thinking right now. I think that will change once there's a very strong Republican contender that's not Donald Trump. But, you know, going into it right now, I think sort of the general sort of layman opinion of like there's, you know, she is the person to beat right now. Of course, the fact that she's on the show, they always say that they don't pull punches because of a cameo. But I mean, I think there's definitely some truth to that. But it also, I think, is just a reflection of the landscape right now.
Because I don't think she took any shots whatsoever from SNL. And I think that all the other candidates, especially even Trump, when we get into a weekend update and stuff like that, and Pete Davidson talking about Trump and his spot about talking about the presidential politics, I felt like all these other candidates, Bernie Sanders even, was, you know, taking shots from SNL. I thought they just hit everybody else pretty good. And Hillary was there in person. It seemed like, you know, they officially are endorsing Hillary.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, normally when we get a Hillary bit, when it's just Kate McKinnon, we're usually making fun of Hillary. Do they hit super hard? No, but they're definitely taking shots at her. I just think that right now, when you're looking at the landscape, taking politics completely out of it and just looking at comedy, that it's sort of like, why would you bother making fun of Hillary right now? Other than she's in a sketch, and we'll talk about the sketch specifically, there's no reason to. There's so many interesting people in the Republican primary specifically who are going to not be political fodder in 3 months. Mm-hmm. Hillary, we're going to be making fun of for the next 18 months. So I kind of get it comedically that it's just there's nothing big. I mean, we could have done more email deleting stuff. Kind of, who cares?
I was surprised they didn't touch on the email at all. Like, I'm surprised there wasn't even a joke about it.
But I think that's absolutely coming. I think that we've got a lot of time. I don't think there's going to be a ton of stuff on Hillary. So I think that we're going to get all that stuff as we, you know, once we get into, you know, who's the Republican, Republican candidate, Republican candidate, Democrat candidate, and we're getting into primary cold opens, we're going to just see tons of Hillary stuff. So I kind of go after the people that are probably not going to be around and are such easy targets right now.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to bigger and better things from Trump on SNL.
Yes.
I felt like this was a good start, but I'm looking for bigger and better coming up.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, let's talk about the monologue, which I actually liked this idea of what they did, where Miley Cyrus serenaded us of these song. Was My Way?
My Way?
Yeah,
My Way.
And so... ultimately, we said goodbye to all the people from the summer of 2015.
Yeah, well, so first we just have to talk about Miley Cyrus coming out and wearing my grandmother's shower mat. I don't understand. I mean, I just assumed, as we've seen, like when Jim Carrey comes out dressed like the devil, there is a reason. It is going to be addressed in the cold open. So it's very odd when there was just sort of no whatever. And I want to talk about this, and then I want to talk for a second about Miley Cyrus. But talking about that, I thought this was great. I thought this was such a great way to sort of quickly sort of get the quick hits of all of the kookiness that happened over the summer without having to sort of make a meal out of it, to see, you know, the dentist that shot, you know, the tiger for just a quick hit. Do we need a sketch about it? No, not at this point. But I love that we sort of get to address it, you know, whether it's Kim Davis or Rachel Dozier. I mean, all this stuff was really great. And then the Jared Fogle / Josh Duggar bit was great. I thought that was a great sight gag, said a ton of stuff. So I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun too. And it was really good. You know, you didn't have to have Miley doing anything other than just singing the song, and everybody got to sort of come out and do their own thing. So yeah, very, very happy.
Yeah, great. I mean, Bobby Moynihan, I thought, did a dead on impression of the pizza rat. I thought that was he captured the essence of pizza rat. And so it was really good. And then, you know, obviously Miley's not a comedian. So not having her try to do any heavy lifting here, she did what she does well, which is sing. The thing I will do say about the monologue, which then sort of will track to the whole episode, is, and this is in no way a critique of Miley or an endorsement of Miley, I don't get who Miley wants to be perceived as. I don't understand the character that she wants me, as not the diehard fan, to think that she even is. Whether she is or not is almost irrelevant. I don't get, is she trying to be, she's not quite now sexy Miley. She's not sort of like bad girl Miley. She's not down home Miley? Is she stoner Miley? Like, I couldn't get, especially in these outfits and some of the shtick she was doing and the songs, I couldn't get my head around what I'm supposed to think about of her, regardless of what I actually think about her.
That's a good question for James when he comes on.
Yes. Yes. So hopefully James can shed some light. So I think that made the episode a little bit more challenging in writing for her because we don't know who she is.
Not Hannah Montana.
Right. And obviously in sort of the surprises of the episode, how is Vanessa? This is the first time that we've had Miley Cyrus on the show where Vanessa Bayer did not play Miley Cyrus with Miley Cyrus. So that shocked me. I'm sure no one's more shocked than Vanessa Bayer, who thought she was guaranteed a major slot in the show and did not get it.
Okay. We have a commercial coming out of the monologue for Abilify. And this was where we were taking some shots at the other guys who are running for the Republican nominee for president. And I did think that this is a funny idea because there's these 17 people or so, and I guess it's less than 17 now because a couple of them dropped out, but all these people running for the Republican nominee and are polling at like this 0.9% and all these, showing up. They can't even get on the main debate. They got to be in like the pre-show debate that's on before that. And they're talking to their family members about what that's like. Very funny.
Yeah, I thought this was really funny. You know, I don't know that I was screaming in laughter, but I thought this was a really funny idea. Just a great nod of like, how do you possibly think you're going to win? And sort of playing with that and having a lot of fun with that. So I absolutely thought it was really funny. I thought they did a great job. I mean, to the extent that I don't even know who Beck Bennett was playing. I did no idea who that guy was. So, and I'm sure it was a real person. So that really made me laugh. I thought that was really fun. And really though, I thought the home run here was the women of SNL, because they're the straight person in this sketch was actually where all the comedy was, to be like, oh yes, honey. Like it was really good. So I don't know that it's something we're going to remember in 2 weeks, but a nice solid start to the show.
Yeah. All right. So we go to our first live sketch then, and it is like basically a parody of some sort of Grease type scene where everybody's at a dance and everybody's singing and dancing and talking about like what's going on at the high school for the homecoming. And then Miley is like a bit of a gangster, and she is rapping and being sort of crazy with the new guy. Rich, what was your take on this?
I think, again, this sort of really falls into the same pocket of I don't know what I'm supposed to think of Miley, so I don't get the – this was kind of a weird like, okay, we're set in the 50s, but one person's rapping. My guess, again, is this was probably a late sketch that was going to happen late in the evening. Hillary's running late. We can't go to Hillary. We need to move something. Logistically, what can we move? Staging-wise, costume-wise, who's in the thing-wise? I'm guessing they pulled this up way early to do something. The only other possibility how a sketch like this made it so early is that it was Miley's idea. There's a very good chance that Miley pitched this and Miley really wanted to do this. You know, it was absolutely cute. I didn't particularly love it. It was a one-note joke. And because I couldn't quite get my head locked into Miley coming into this sketch, I wasn't quite sure what the sort of game of the scene was, what the whole premise that what is it what we're saying was come in the sketch. So I could see maybe Miley fans finding this funnier because they know something I don't.
Yeah, I also thought it took a long time to get to what the joke of the sketch was. Like, I feel like yes. There was a good portion, and I'm like, wait, where is this going? Wait, what's? Am I missing it yet? And then she starts rapping, and then Keenan comes in, and then she has to date that guy, or Keenan's going to date the guy.
Yes.
I found it pretty confusing, and I wasn't particularly amused with this one. I thought that was a real miss in terms of first live sketch of the season.
Yeah, I felt like it felt a little filler-like to me. I would agree.
All right, well, let's not spend too much time there because let's talk about Val the bartender. Here is the appearance from Hillary Clinton that everybody's been waiting for. Here she is, and she plays the bartender with Kate McKinnon playing Hillary. Rich, was this about what you expected from Hillary Clinton tonight?
I would say this was better than I expected. And again, you know, having nothing to do with politics, whether we're talking about, Republican, Democrat, politicians are not actors. They're not comedians. They're not used to live TV in this way. So we're never going to get hilarious comedy from a politician cameo. That said, I thought it was much more fun than the classic, you know, Hillary comes on as Hillary talking to the Hillary impression. And then we just check off a number of classic jokes that you would have seen coming. This was a little bit more fun. I thought Hillary seemed much more comfortable. She seemed to really have fun with it. Of course, she's tied to the cue cards. How could she not? Be. This is not what she does. But when you sort of let go of that, I thought a lot of fun. And of course, I'm sure what everybody will be quoting this week will be the fun that Kate McKinnon as an openly gay lesbian woman had with her about, you know, the whole gay rights issue and saying, I could have come to that earlier. And Hillary's saying, you know, I did come to it pretty early. And she's like, yeah, but you could have come even earlier. I thought that was a really fun moment.
Yeah, that was great.
It was really
that was a really, really fun moment, I thought, with the two of them. And I thought that it was really well done. And yeah, it wasn't the typical SNL thing where, you know, Kate McKinnon is doing the impression and then Hillary walks out into the scene. It was great that they had Hillary as this other character who was sort of like her own fully formed character in that scene talking with Hillary Clinton. And she was a really good sport about it. Again, I felt like they were a little bit kid gloves with her. I felt like you could have gotten an email joke in there.
I was surprised there was no email joke. And I'm sure that must have been a condition of her showing up, because that they were at points obviously looking for things to make fun of, because, okay, we're talking about her perception. She's cold. She wants it so bad. Grandmother. Oh, okay. Okay. And so obviously an email joke would have been. So I'm sure that was like, hey, I'm trying to get that. I'm sure she asked to not do that.
I'm sure too. So yes. Then what did you think about the appearance of the Daryl Hammond Clinton?
I loved it. I love it. It just, it makes me happy. It just makes me happy for him to show up. He did nothing. He said one line and just ran out. And it was just like, it just made me happy. And I think, and that's the thing I was thinking about why he, you know, originally I wanted him to be Trump. This is where someone like Daryl Hammond should be. It's just going to, it's a drop in, it's a cameo, it's a one or two line and make everyone laugh and get out. He just brings such joy to that stage when he's doing Bill Clinton. So I thought it was super fun.
I mean, isn't it kind of crazy that Daryl Hammond's like two signature characters from his SNL tenure have, you know, become like very important figures in the, you know, political landscape of 2016?
Yeah. It is absolutely bizarre. No question about it. Yes.
And he happens to be the new announcer.
And
for the show.
The announcer, yeah. And he's there. That's the crazy part. He's there, which is crazy.
Yeah. And it wasn't really like a year ago. They were like, well, this is important for, you know, maybe you saw the Bill Clinton thing. Nobody saw the Trump thing coming.
Yeah. Hillary, obviously, we've known for a while. But the Trump thing, I mean, that's stunning to me.
Now, Rich, I did think that the Hillary sketch kind of fell apart for me with the Lean On Me musical part of it, because I felt like it was neither funny nor a great musical performance. And I was a little bit like, what are they trying to do here?
Well, I guess I would disagree in that I liked it. Was it hilarious? No, but I liked it. You've got Hillary Clinton singing a song and passing it, you know, it structurally did start to fall apart, but the energy, as opposed to one more joke and then we're out, I did like the sort of energy that brought to it. It clearly was a little all over the place, but I enjoyed it just to see Hillary have a little bit more fun, loosen up a little bit more than she has. So for me, I liked it.
Okay. All right, so we go from that into the musical stylings of Miley Cyrus. We saw that Hillary Clinton introduced Miley Cyrus. What'd you think of that, Rich?
Good on her. Going after the youth vote. I doubt she could have picked out Miley Cyrus in a lineup, but good on her. It was really fun.
All right, here is for the first time in season 41, the great editor of Exclaim magazine, James Keith. James, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, very good. Welcome to Blab to talk about SNL.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
I just want to let you know I'm on a 7-second delay.
Okay. I won't ask whether that's from smoking or not. So, James, tell us that Rich had some good questions about Miley and her persona right now. Can you tell us what is Miley going for these days?
Honestly, I have no idea. And it seems to change every 6 to 8 months. Although I do think that her backing band for the first song tonight is part of the reason why, and that is the Flaming Lips.
Oh, Okay, that makes sense to me.
So that was Wayne Coyne, and Wayne Coyne and Miley Cyrus have been spending a lot of time together in the last while. Maybe a little creepy, don't really want to get into that. But they are her backing band on the free record that she just dropped a month or so ago, the songs of which she was playing tonight. So, and they also just after the show tonight announced that they're going on tour together, where the Flaming Lips will be her backing band and then also play themselves. So she's been spending a lot of time with Wayne Coyne, and Wayne Coyne is kind of a art for art's sake weirdo. And I think that's particularly where a lot of the costume ideas are coming from. And to a certain extent, I think where some of the musical direction is headed.
I guess that makes sense. Okay.
But honestly, what I think is really interesting is I don't know. She doesn't know. I don't think she really cares. She doesn't need the money. She doesn't need to maintain her Hannah Montana audience. And so she just seems to be thinking like, I'm just going to try a bunch of interesting things and do what interests me. And I'm not beholden to a certain image or a certain record company or even a certain audience, because I think for a lot of her sort of Hannah Montana audience, they're going to leave because they have to, you know, in the same way that you want to go to university, not in the town you grew up in. Hannah Montana fans are going to go and become a fan of somebody else. And Miley's going to turn into an adult artist and going to be a totally different and interesting one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think the costume art side and the music side are necessarily always on the same page.
Yes. That was very confusing to me. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get into the two different musical numbers. Let's start with that first number. And I guess let's start with the outfit that she's wearing in that. Well, what would you say she's going for? Is that like Eve in the Garden of Eve? The Garden of Eden?
I thought maybe she was playing hide and seek in a craft store.
Ooh.
And she had hidden in a big bucket of stuff. And then she just stood up. And that's, you know, what she was wearing on stage.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if she was trying to be sexy, because underneath all of the nonsense, her outfit was actually fairly skimpy, which was just so odd to me. I couldn't get my head around it.
She seems to be on a real hot streak, pardon the pun, of sort of non-sexualized nudity recently. She seems to be naked everywhere, and it doesn't seem to be particularly a sexy intent. She just likes to be naked or you know, she's not Rihanna.
Okay.
Right. In her love of exhibitionism.
All right, well, let's talk about the actual music. What did you think of the actual first song that she did?
So Karen, Don't Be Sad was the first song. Both of these are from this free record that she just dropped at the end of August that she says she's been working on for 5 years, that she made with Wayne Coyne and the Flaming Lips, and also Mike Will Made It, the producer, and rapper Big Sean is on it. It's a very eclectic sounding thing. And it's such a beautiful kind of straightforward mid-tempo song that I was thinking like this could be a big hit for like a mid-70s, like sort of slightly psychedelic singer-songwriter type. Like this could be on a solo record by a member of Fleetwood Mac, or James Taylor could make this into a hit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will we see that collaboration soon? Miley and James Taylor?
Maybe. The other one I kept thinking was Elton John, just where the presentation was so over the top in one way and the songs would just be, you know, pretty simple and catchy kind of radio hits.
Maybe in the same way that Lady Gaga was working with Tony Bennett, she'll find her Elton John or James Taylor.
Maybe, although it might be Wayne Coyne. Wayne Coyne may just be that, and this is the Miley we're going to get.
What did you think of the performance, James?
I thought it was good. I thought it was really, interesting, and she's such a good singer that she can basically do whatever she wants. And so what's interesting is what she chooses to do, because I think if she wanted to keep making stuff like Bangers, which was her record from a couple of years ago, that was a very, you know, sort of hip hop heavy production and, you know, kind of typical, you know, in the Katy Perry kind of lane. But now she's just decided like she has this band, the Det Pets, and she's just going to make weird psychedelic music. And because she's such a great singer, and I think she's so curious musically, I'm always going to wonder what it's going to be. And I don't think it's necessarily always going to be obvious.
All right. Well, speaking of the Det Pets, let's talk about the second song that she sang, which from what I understand is an homage to her animals that died.
The band is called the Det Pets, and so is the album. And then there were seemingly dead pets on the piano. And then, of course, she broke down at the end of the song, and you know, she was fighting tears sort of for the last third, clearly. And then, you know, then there's a little screaming section, and she has a great rock scream, which I hadn't really appreciated before. And then she you know, breaks down in tears at the end. And I don't know that if the song is about the pets. I was sort of trying to, you know, listen for clues in the lyrics, and nothing seemed that obvious. And it is. I don't know what to say about the pet.
You know, it's interesting. On this song, I had two totally different experiences. I had an experience watching it, and I had an experience listening to it with my eyes closed. Because watching it, I was just, all I was doing was thinking in my head, how many sketches do we have left? What's going on? Should I actually fast forward? And at one point, because it was late, I had closed my eyes, and I went, actually, this is kind of good. Like, I kind of like this. And then I'd open my eyes, and I was instantly annoyed with it again. And so, you know, not what she's wearing, the piano with the drapery and the tchotchkes. And it was so hard to get my head around. But I thought the song itself, when I was just listening to it, as simple as it was, I don't know, kind of good.
Yeah, that's the contradiction right now. And you don't know if she's going to keep going in the art craft direction, or if the music is going to continue being in, if she's going to continue on in an interesting direction there too. I think she's just trying stuff because she's 22 and rich.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Why not?
All right, James, are you looking forward to the weekend next week?
I'm very much looking forward to the weekend. They flopped the season premiere in the second episode, weirdly. I don't know why. Because the two people that had the biggest summers are certainly the host and the musical guest for next week.
Okay. All right, James, great job again. Follow James on Twitter. He's at Exclaim Editor. We'll talk to you next week.
Good luck with the Mets, but not too much good luck.
All right. Thank you, James. All right, Rich. So let's talk about a weekend update. And it was an interesting night for a weekend update. No change made here on Weekend Update with the beleaguered pairing of Jost and Michael Che. But they are back, yep. And you're happy that they did not touch this?
You know, you got to give them time. I mean, you got to give them more than half a season to really sort of settle in here, you know, or, you know, a season. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm not feeling the chemistry between the two of them that I would like to see. And I don't know why. I feel like that's Che, and I'm not sure if there actually is a lack of chemistry or if they're going for something that I'm not getting yet. You know, in our chat room, Choose for President says, bring in Cecily Strong. You guys know my feeling. She was robbed. She was doing great. She should have stayed on. But that said, this is who we have. So it is what it is. And I don't know that the two of them together did anything sort of amazing. I think most of the funny jokes, I don't remember them any specifically, came from the Jost side of the house. I don't know that Michael Che had any of the bigger laughs this week, although that is, obviously there's writers, so it's not them. So between the two of them, let's see what happens. Jury's still out. I want to give them a little more time.
Okay. So, Rich, we ended up with three panelists here. The first was the Pope made a visit to Weekend Update. Kyle Mooney as Pope Francis.
Kyle Mooney as Pope Francis for the second time in one episode, because he did a cameo in the monologue when we saw, you know, this court whatever woman showing up. He did a little cameo there. So, yeah, I think this could be a very funny impression. This could be a very funny character. I think they still need to sort of find what exactly is it. Are we doing a thing like we used to do with you know, David Patterson when Fred Armisen used to do it, where he's sort of like doing shtick, the character, I mean, or is it he's trying to be sort of the hip guy? So I thought a very, I like the chemistry. I thought very, very congenial impression. Still just probably, if we're going to do it again, we kind of need to figure out comedically, who is this Pope compared to the real Pope? Still a little muddy for me.
Just a interesting aside with that piece of Weekend Update. Our own Antonio Mazzaro, who hosts a couple of shows on post-show recaps with us, he tweeted that he thought that Pope Francis bit in Weekend Update was one of the worst thing that SNL has done in years. And it was favorited by SNL alum Jim Brewer.
Yes, I saw that. Look at us. How about that? Yeah. I was very surprised that he felt like it was the worst thing in years. I mean, you know, put that next to any 3 minutes of Garth and Kat. come on. I mean, that, you know, there's so many, you know, how many Fred Armisen, Nicholas Fay, the comedian. I mean, there's so many things I could point to that I thought were way worse than that. But absolutely, if you're going to bring it back, and I suspect we will not, certainly needs this sort of structurally from a comedic standpoint. We need to go back and go, okay, who is this guy? And they certainly did not crack that just yet. This felt like they were throwing a lot of comedic premises at the wall, maybe to sort of see who sticks, see what sticks on air, and then we could see a refined character if they choose to do it.
Now, we ended up going to the well to hit with both of our non-character resident comedian guests here. First was Pete Davidson, that we heard from him back here tonight to talk about politics. Were we surprised that we went with so few characters and went with just the comedians on the Weekend Update desk?
I wasn't, because I actually wasn't surprised by this, because you know, I think these are the two people that I think that the team, the production of SNL thinks is hitting most with the younger audience. And I think that they wanted to get a Pete Davidson in early on. This obviously, the bit that he was doing could have been next week, the week after, December, doesn't matter. I think they wanted to get Pete Davidson in the show early because he's a little bit of a young favorite. And then the same thing with Leslie Jones. I think up until this point in the show, Leslie Jones has had very little to do. And I think that they see her as sort of a big kind of a big up and coming star on the show. And so I think that they absolutely wanted to plug her in as well. So I certainly get it. The only thing that surprised me was the order. Typically on a Weekend Update, you would have had the character in between the two real people doing basically stand-up comedy. So it was a little surprising how they sort of ordered this.
When Pete Davidson compared Donald Trump to Sanjaya, did you think that was an apt comparison?
Loved it. Loved it. I thought that was great. Absolutely great. And as someone who watched that season of American Idol and listened to Howard Stern during that season, it was a great callback and a very fun sort of call.
Did it bother you that he said Sanjaya came in fourth place?
I didn't think he actually made it that far, but I didn't remember. Is that inaccurate?
It's inaccurate. He came in seventh place, Sanjaya.
Okay. You know what? I guess it did bump me a bit, because when he said that, I went, that doesn't sound right. But so great Pete Davidson. Again, as we always talk about these guys, you know, Pete Davidson was asked to come on to speak about something, and he actually spoke about it. Even though he was coming at it from a point of view of, I don't know, I thought it was great. And the idea that Donald Trump being in the fight would actually make him want to vote because it would be that important to him was great. So I thought, other than the fact that Pete Davidson has never looked higher during a Weekend Update sketch, that he looked, I would say, almost insultingly to the audience high. I thought it was one of his better pieces, because it was on topic, it was insightful, it was relatable, it didn't go on too long, and it wasn't just clearly a stand-up chunk that was refashioned to match a current event. So I loved it. I thought it was great.
Now, is that a thing, though? Are young people very concerned about Donald Trump being president?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine maybe so. I think that might get people to come out and vote if they, could anyone actually imagine Donald? Well, we won't get into politics, but I will say yes, I have to imagine that there's a kernel of truth to that he tapped into.
Okay. Then in terms of Leslie Jones, how do you think she did back? Now, they mentioned, of course, that she was in the Ghostbusters movie. Is that intentional? Was that
Yeah. I mean, I think that I could have seen it one or two ways. They always want to absolutely shoehorn in an unnecessary her hitting on Colin Jost as the structure of her appearances. Don't need it. If it's not organic to what you're talking about, guys, it's fine. We get it. You're great. We don't need to go to that well every time. So I don't know if it was like just giving her the props that she deserves and sort of trying to anoint her as a star, or if it was just literally she wanted to say, I ain't afraid of no Jost, and that she was saying that all during the shoot and she couldn't wait to say that on live TV. Either way, it was absolutely fine.
Okay. What about the content of what Leslie Jones had to say?
I thought it was very fun. Very fun. Had nothing to do with current events whatsoever. She's our relationship expert, which is why we're sort of putting this sort of stand-up chunk here. but I thought it was very fun. So the timing of this, as well as one of the sketches we saw, I thought was a little redundant in very broad terms, but I thought it was good. Great energy, great jokes. I really liked it a lot.
Okay. All right. Anything else on Weekend Update?
No, good timing. Didn't feel like the whole bit went on too long, which can sometimes happen with three appearances. So, yeah, it was pretty solid.
Okay. So we come out of Weekend Update and we talk about the millennials. And so, Rich, is this potentially going to be the new Californians?
You know what? My wife said that to me as soon as it ended. She's like, oh, this is going to be the new Californians. Yeah, I think we will see it again. I think now I feel like this was, I liked the sketch, by the way. I thought it was very fun. I enjoyed it. I thought that if we had last season Dakota Johnson hosted and we did a thing about Winter Office and the yes. window being opened, which I thought was a much more intelligent and less broad brush painting of millennials that I thought was more clever and insightful. I thought the millennials was just funnier. I just thought it was just a lot of funny jokes and funny characters. And again, you know, what makes so much, you know, this is a sketch where really the straight men are really getting most of the laughs because it's the reaction to this. Kate McKinnon, wonderfully over the top, asking for a promotion after 3 days, wanting to be like, would you say VP of pictures because she knows Photoshop. I just love that. And you know, her and them, it was identifying identifying as gay, even though like, the whole thing was just great. And the whole gender thing was really fun. So even though I understand clearly, if you're going to make fun of millennials, the go-to is that they're always on their phone. You can't sustain a reoccurring sketch with that. You have to let that go if you're going to bring this back again, which I think that they will. And it was funny. It was a good solid piece.
So what are we watching for the next time they have sort of a young person host? We go back to the millennials?
I think so. I don't think we'll see it again this year, but I think coming into our January episodes, I could definitely see another young actress or actor wanting to do this and make fun of their own thing and hopefully bring some more. I was surprised there wasn't more references to millennial-based apps. So that we didn't get a Snapchat joke mm-hmm. or a blab.im joke. Look at me being current.
The millennials love blab.im.
Exactly. So
that's what the M stands for.
Exactly. So so I'm surprised by that. But overall, it was very fun. It was a very fun piece. It was just great to see Bobby Moynihan get some screen time, albeit it was pretty small. John Rudnitsky getting a good amount of screen time here for a featured player. So it was fun.
All right, Rich, then we have this sketch that takes place in the deli from When Harry Met Sally. Has there ever been a more random setup for a sketch?
Yes. I thought the Cat's Deli sketch, odd choice to put it in when I felt like we had Leslie Jones in the Weekend Update, you know, segment was in. She wasn't doing an orgasm, but it was in this area. So it felt a little redundant to me for Leslie Jones topic wise. I thought this was absolutely just a performance piece. It reminded me, this is going to make no sense to anyone else, but it reminded me of the pieces that I like when Bobby Moynihan and Cecily Strong think that they're going to get fired and they start going on a rant, making fun of everybody. And it's not the funniest thing and it makes no sense in the world, but it's just performance. And I thought this was just, we're watching Leslie build and build and build and build and just constantly the condom breaking every time and the penis, the small pecker, everything about it was a funny performance on paper. I don't know that I needed this sketch in my life, but it was fun to see her go to 11. And as I've said about her, she's actually better than just 11. That in general, what I liked about coming off of the Weekend Update piece is that in Weekend Update, she was not playing at 11. She was often hitting nice peaks and valleys, and here was 11. So, okay, I get it.
Is this a real place that people really go to go yes. to the table yes. to sit at mm-hmm. When Harry Met Sally deli?
I can't say whether the table is still there, but yes, Cat's Deli, it was shot on location. My understanding is the deli is still around, so that is a thing. I mean, and even though the two pieces of sort of the white girls first and then the Leslie Jones piece almost felt very different, I was quite amused by the now how many years later from When Harry Met Sally we're doing sort of the white housewife character character wanting to do the pretending to do an orgasm. I thought Vanessa Bayer was very funny in this. Her doing her impression of Billy Crystal was like a cute little assist that I thought was really nice.
Yeah, I did feel like it was two different sketches where it was like the first sketch was like Leslie Jones didn't know what they were talking about. And then Leslie Jones had her own like second half of the sketch.
Yes, it would absolutely. It felt like two pieces put together. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the movie parody, The Squad, which to me felt like this was very reminiscent of the Bajency from that last season where you weren't allowed to say that you didn't like Beyonce. Here we have it was who was it? Was it Kate McKinnon or this was Vanessa Bayer with A.D. Bryant?
Vanessa Bayer and A.D. Bryant, yeah.
Yeah, and they were the only people left that were not in Taylor Swift's squad.
Yeah, so obviously we're sort of mapping Taylor Swift onto The Walking Dead. At least that's how it sort of felt where they were going. You know, for me, I don't know that this worked for me so much. It made me giggle, but I don't know that this was something I would ever go back to. It felt like, again, a little muddy in what it was. So, yeah, it didn't really do much for me. Not surprised that this is very close to the end of the show.
Production value was incredible. Like, they really did a great... It looked great. It wasn't super funny, but they really have nailed down these fake movies.
Yes, they did a very good job. Very good job, definitely. Yeah. So, okay.
Are you in the Taylor Swift squad?
You know, I'm squad adjacent. I have been waitlisted to the squad, so I'm waiting to see if my number gets called into the squad. I'm hoping. We'll see.
All right. So then we have one of these throwback type shows where we do like whether it's sort of it wasn't like one of these like American classic movies or this was sort of like a bit of a documentary about a woman named Ruby Nichols, played by Leslie Jones, who was a talk show host in the 60s.
The 50s, I think. It was, again, I maybe was a little Leslie Jones'd out by this point. Not to say I don't love her, but we had a lot of Leslie Jones from Weekend Update forward. So, yeah, this was a cute idea that I thought was definitely cute. It was sort of jumped around a bunch. I like that they're doing this kind of stuff.
That, you know, we go so much Leslie Jones and then like we barely see Miley Cyrus for like the middle 45 minutes of the show. Like we see her in the Millennials sketch and that's really it up until, you know, we see her as the guest here in this sketch. Like Miley did not really have a lot to do in this episode.
No, that's true. They really sort of pulled her back, especially on the comedic, you know, cats of her, you know, whatever, like in the squad, she shows up in a very small role. You know, we're seeing her in the Ruby Nichols. She's playing Haley Mills. So screen time, but not, they're not giving her any heavy lifting at this point. So maybe they just knew she was going to be too stoned by Weekend Update to do any heavy lifting based on what she said. So who knows?
Yeah. Anything stand out for you from the Ruby Nichols sketch?
No. I mean, I liked what they were going for. It jumped around a little bit sort of tonally. So, no, it was cute. It was a cute idea. Okay.
Okay. Then we went right into the wedding of Kyle Mooney to Miley Cyrus in the dressing room. I believe we did this also the last time she was on the show, right?
Yeah. So this was in essence sort of a callback, or this was like a flat out continuation in that when she was in the second episode of season 39. So almost two years ago to the day, they had a pre-tape bit at the end where Miley Cyrus is into Kyle Mooney and he's being weird about it. And it was one of our favorite pieces of that night. It was a really fun piece. This actually featured her less so. It was more about her than it was with her. Much more bizarre, much weirder. I really liked this a lot. I thought this was really fun. And I thought for the Good Neighbor sketches, and again, for people who haven't been with us for a bit, Kyle and Beck and Kyle Beck and one other gentleman were in a sketch group called Good Neighbor that was directed by a guy they brought on to be a director of video pieces. So a lot of these pre-tapes are sort of their bits in a way that The Lonely Island used to be. I thought this was one of their best because it was weird, but it wasn't weird for the sake of weird. There was a very clear sort of through line. They usually don't do weird very well. They don't do weird often, but they don't do it very well when they have. So I thought this was, and that's not fair to say, but this was the best of that. So I thought this was really fun, really clear ending to the sketch. I liked it. It was a great way to end the night for me.
In terms of 1255 sketches, how did this rate for you?
A solid A. I thought this was great. This is the kind of weird, what are you doing, but still funny, made me laugh. It's exactly what I want to see at 1255. Loved it.
Did it make you sad that Kyle Mooney is dead now?
It is unfortunate. And he just got promoted from featured player. It was so sad. But some of the greats, they go too soon. What are you going to do?
Sad. SNL curse. All right. Richard, of course, we can't wrap up the show until we talk about the goodbyes from the audience, from Miley Cyrus and everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, great. Obviously, a lot of energy. No moat whatsoever. No moat. So it was good to see everyone sort of together. John, the new guy, front and center, very excited to be there. A lot of love from the gang to him in his debut episode. And just seemed like a lot of positive energy. I think Bobby was off to the side. I didn't get a read on Bobby, who everyone here knows I love, and had a very light night for him. But in general, seemed to be a positive.
I think a lot of the cast had a light outside of Leslie Jones. I mean, I don't think there was any one cast member that really was all over the place.
Yeah, Taryn. I mean, obviously being in the cold open is going to give you a lot of sort of screen time, but I think Taryn carried a lot of the show. Beck was doing a lot of supporting work, you know, but again, I don't know if we talked about this. This is a very large cast for Saturday Night Live. I mean, we just had a few years ago, you know, a concerted effort to get the cast back down to a manageable size. And then people have just been added without losing people. So we're back up to, I think, 16 people, I want to say, which is probably too big for a cast. It's a lot of people. So yeah, a lot of people are going to get lost as people certainly did this week.
Okay. Any other thoughts about the Miley Cyrus edition before we start to look forward to next week with Amy Schumer?
No, only something that you sort of touched on, which is I think sometimes what SNL does well with someone who is popular but maybe not a great sketch person is have them not be the weird thing in a sketch, but in fact be the a straight person in a sketch and let the comedians do what the comedians do. So I thought from an uber looking at this episode, well played by SNL, having people play to their strengths.
All right, so when we look at next week's episode hosted by Amy Schumer, what do you think any predictions on what we're going to see in this upcoming episode?
Well, I think this is going to be an interesting one because, again, you know, normally stand-up comedians hosting SNL are sort of a weird sort of fit. We'll get a great monologue from Amy Schumer. She's got her HBO comedy special coming up, which is probably what she's sort of most directly going to be sort of promoting. But Amy Schumer has her own sketch show. Now, on Amy Schumer's sketch show, Amy Schumer tends to play characters that, as bizarre as they are actually based very much on herself in bizarre situations. She doesn't usually play super over-the-top characters as SNL is wont to do. So the tone of the Amy Schumer show is very different from SNL. So I think we know she's good in sketches, which is great. So we'll get to see her in not just, you know, basically doing, you know, a stand-up comedian in a sketch bit, but I don't know tonally what they'll do. But I'm certainly looking forward to it. It should be a really fun show.
All right. Trues for President says, who would you guys like to see be featured more moving forward?
I mean, you must be new to this if you don't know who I'm going to say. I mean, in my world, it's all Bobby all the time. But any show that doesn't have a lot more Bobby is really upsetting to me.
I mean, but what is this, year 8 for Bobby Moynihan? If it hasn't happened by now, Is it not going to happen?
He's in a weird situation in that he doesn't have big characters that everybody wants to go back to. I mean, you know, he last year showed a lot of sign as Ted Cruz. If Ted Cruz does something notable, he's in a really good position. But other than that, he doesn't have a lot of big characters. I mean, I think you'll see him a lot at Weekend Update. We're going to see Riblet back. We're going to see Drunk Uncle back. We're going to see Anthony Crispino back. But outside of that, you know, are we going to see a Fox and Friends where he can play the whatever it is, the third character who's the dumb guy? I don't know. So, you know, are we going to see him as you know, Tonker Bell's love interest, the Fievel the Mouse? Probably not. So, you know, I don't know if it's a writing thing that he's not writing and getting stuff on the air or if people are not writing for him, but Bobby needs a character really, really badly.
Okay. All right. Well, we will discuss it all next week when we talk about the Amy Schumer episode and then ultimately the Tracy Morgan episode 2 weeks from yesterday. So, Rich, great job back. You haven't missed a beat over the summer.
I've been waiting. I've been basically just sitting here in front of a computer that's turned off.
And so Rich, so next Sunday, we will be back to talk about the Amy Schumer episode. Very excited for that.
Very excited. Yes.
And then we will be ready to talk about Tracy Morgan in 2 weeks. I'm really excited for the next 2 weeks of SNL.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. Question, do you think we'll see Bill Hader show up for the Amy Schumer episode? I'm thinking no.
Yeah, I mean, he just was on last season.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised, but you know, some of these alumni, you can't keep them away.
I could see a monologue. I could see him walking on as a monologue to give her advice on how to host the show. Be fun to see Hader do a little show up there.
All right, Rich. Well, thank you. Great job. Thank you to for being back here this week. Thanks to James Keast. Great job breaking down Miley. Thanks to everybody who watched us live here on blab.im.
I loved it. Loved the new format. Yeah. We're like SNL. We're changing with the times.
Changing with the times. All right. We'll be back next week. Lots more coming up on post show recaps this week, including our recap of the Muppets. Have you watched the Muppets, Rich?
I saw the first episode. Yes. I haven't seen the second.
We talked about that as well on our weekly scripted TV mishmash show that we're calling Most Shows Recap. We talked about that over the weekend. Plus, Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead finale is tonight, Sunday night. Regular Walking Dead is coming back next Sunday. The Leftovers podcast is coming back as well. So a lot going on. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.